Jonathan Hollerman is a former military survival, evasion, resistance, and escape instructor. His book, Survival Theory, A Preparedness Guide, was number one bestseller on Amazon. He is also well known for his best-selling preparedness fiction series, EMP, Equipping Modern Patriots. Today, Jonathan's time is consumed by his company, Grid Down Consulting, a survival retreat consulting firm which focuses on strategically designed and building off-grid survival retreats for wealthy Americans all over the United States. He's also a man of God. Welcome to the show, Jonathan.
Hey, thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, Jonathan, I'm looking forward to having a conversation with you. You know, and then these gear instructor guys like to torture us regular dudes. So thanks for all that great training that you get put us through.
You bet.
Okay, I'm gonna play a quick excerpt from one of Jonathan's videos and read a couple paragraphs from his Survival Theory of Preparedness Guide from Chapter 6. And then we'll get into talking to Jonathan. Here we go.
Quote, "The Congressional EMP Commission on which I served calculated that within a year of the blackout that knocks out the national grid, we would probably lose up to 9 out of 10 Americans through starvation, disease, and societal collapse. The only reason we can sustain a population of 310 million Americans is technology. If you take that away, we don't have any way of feeding, providing water, or even providing communications and government for an orderly society that is going to sustain 310 million Americans." Unquote. Dr. Peter Pry, Executive Director for the Task Force on National Homeland Security Policy.
Excerpt from Survival Theory, A Preparedness Guide, Chapter 6, pages 52 to 53. A lot of experts say I am fear-mongering or exaggerating how bad it will be. They say Americans will work together and will get through it. They don't understand human suffering and no experience dealing with starving people. Starving Americans will act no different than starving people in the Congo or Mogadishu. In fact, they will likely act much worse. Americans, even the poor, have never seen true hunger or been actively starving, regardless of how the media portray them. America's poor eat better than 80% of the world's population. They didn't grow up without food like many people in certain parts of Africa or China. Americans and their entitlement mentalities will be viciously angry when they get hungry. They will have no experience or idea how to deal with the mental hallucinations brought on by hunger pains, and most will resort to anger and violence. Looting, raping, and pillaging will become the norm. It will be straight Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome and eventually like the movie The Postman. I don't care if they fix the electrical grid a year later. Most Americans will be dead, and the only ones left will be the survivalists, the extremely lucky, the larger, well-organized gangs of looters, and the strongest and most brutal men who left their souls at the gate and did horrible things to survive. Who are they going to fix the grid for? Are we going to forget what has transpired and go back to driving our Priuses to work at Starbucks? Are you going to get the warlords to give up their positions of power among their men and their harems of sexual slave girls? The day the electrical grid goes down, America as a civilized nation ceases to exist.
Well, Jonathan, that's a lot in just a short time, and it's kind of culminating the first six chapters of your book, Survival Theory, which I've read and listened to both on audio. And it's a fantastic book, and it's a pleasure to have you on the show today. I just hope that you can relate some of the things in the first six chapters of this book that really hit home to those of us who understand the threats that we face as a nation.
Sure, I really appreciate you having me on here, and thank you for making me look like a complete psycho by reading that one section of my book without the rest of the context around it. That's great. So I feel I have to put a disclaimer in here. So I have a company called Grid Down Consulting. I specialize in designing and building off-grid survival retreats for wealthy Americans around the country. That's what I spend a lot of my time in. My book, Survival Theory of Preparedness Guide, How to Survive the End of the World on a Budget, I wrote that to try and help the little guy, because not everyone can afford a multi-million dollar retreat, okay? But the big thing to understand is where I come from. So anybody listening to this interview has to understand that I come from the preparedness mindset. My business motto is hope for the best, prepare for the worst, let God do the rest, right? You have to plan for the worst case scenario. And I fully believe the worst case scenario for this country, I and many others, is a long-term loss of the electric grid. And that's just, you mention that to people, and it's not even on their radar. They've never heard of it. They don't even know that's even an option. I mean, for all they know, every single day they flip the light switch, lights come on, they turn their faucets, you know, purified water comes out of it. You know, they flush their toilet and the bad, nasty stuff goes somewhere. They don't even know where it goes. It just goes away. Like, all these things just happen, and they've been, it's been that way for 100 years in this country. There's never been any interruption in that. The food infrastructure, there's no interruption in that. So this idea that, you know, life without electricity, when it truly and completely controls every aspect of human life and civilization, say, if you lose electricity, it's over. I mean, nothing works, nothing moves, no interstate trucking, no food distribution network to feed 300 million Americans. None of that stuff works. So then 99.9% of the people have never sat down and just pondered what life looks like without electricity. And so that's, you know, I posted that one chapter from my book onto YouTube. I think it's the only video I've really posted on YouTube. And it's got like 140,000 hits the last couple months. So it's resonating with people. If you explain it to people in terms they understand, if you break it down and say, hey, this is what it takes just to have clean water for your house and, you know, to heat your home and, you know, people are like, well, I'm going to grow food. Okay, that's great. I used to garden when I was younger. My parents garden. I used to help them weed. It's like, well, how many calories are in a canning jar of green beans? How many jars of green beans do you need to feed your family through the winter? Do you know how much food you need to make it through till next harvest time? Do you have a root cellar to store that stuff? It's, you know, even a lot of the country people out here where I live that garden don't understand the magnitude of the amount of food that you need to grow to feed yourself. And as usual, I'm going down a rabbit trail, so I'm just going to rein it in here.
I just wanted to bring up real quick, the perspective a lot of people have is like what National Geographic did with their blackout movie or documentary that they did. You know, after the 10th day, power was restored, and, oh, it's a bright new beginning, and we can all get back to kumbaya. But in reality, there's already been portions of the city and county and state and nation that have been controlled from almost the first or second day of a catastrophe by warlords who have, you know, gangbangers who are now warlords of large segments of the territory. And it's not going to be an easy re-civilization back to normal, right?
So here's my major issue with the preparedness community and the emergency management community as a whole. You know, and again, I get put in this extremist point of view a lot of times, but they never lived it. Almost all the people that write, you know, the top 5 bug out bags, you know, the top 3 knives for they've never seen starving people or fed people overseas. They have no experience of human desperation and starvation. They just have no background for a lot of the things they recommend and they talk about. I think there's a Huffington Post did a big article on how a lot of the prepper authors are ghostwritten by people who hate preppers. So it's just, you have to know what information you're getting and where you're getting it. And I think that's one of the big misconceptions is how everyone's going to react when something like this happens. Everyone just thinks we're going to stand around and sing kumbaya. And I'll agree to that. I'll agree to that premise as long as there's food and water and, you know, some sense of sanitation. As long as there's some law and order, some kind of infrastructure, some kind of continuity of community or government, if that's still in place, hey, that's fine. That game all day long. But if you lose that, well, let me say this. If you take away food, which is what will happen if you lose electricity, if you leave the ability to feed people, I don't care. You can have William Wallace, the leader, okay, he's not going to be able to control the people that are starving to death. You can't govern people that are just, you can't. They're just going to, you can't trust them. And you bring up the movie American Blackout. I highly recommend that. for everyone to watch. I think it's an eye-opening thing to show people how fast society falls apart.
Right.
Now, two takeaways. One, the survivalist in there, you know, he wears the camo, you know, pants, and he's got the flat top, and they typically take the prepper as a crazy guy.
Which, yeah, I mean, yeah, they have to.
I get it.
Yeah.
They have to. Whatever. Yeah, but the real big thing I brought away is the same point that you brought up. You know, on day three, I don't remember which day it was. It's been a while since I've seen it. You know, they're fighting in the entryway to that, you know, their apartment complex over, I think it was a can of peaches or something.
Yeah, a can of
peaches. And they're fighting, and the guy is trying to take, and he beats the guy's head in with the can of peaches, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, in self-defense, I mean, the guy was trying to kill him to get that food.
Yeah.
And so by the end of the week, you know, when the power comes back on, you know, like you said, the music comes up and everyone's like, hey, it's like, dude, you just beat a guy's head in with peaches. How do you come back from that 3 days later and say, oh, well, the power's, how many people are dead? You know, all the, like, the world, the country would be in utter chaos at that point. And I'm not saying you wouldn't come back from it. You know, a week without power is not going to destroy your country. It's going to mess things up really bad. Things are going to fall apart a lot faster than people think.
Oh, yeah.
But 10 days isn't enough for people to be starving to death.
Yeah.
Right? You know, cholera, dysentery. I'm talking about long-term loss of electric grid where they destroy the high-voltage transformers. And if you've done any research, you realize there's 2,000 of them in this country. It takes 12 to 18 months to build. And we only replace about a dozen of them every year.
And where are they built at?
South Korea and Germany. So you take those, you take out with an EMP or a solar flare or whatever, you destroy a large percentage of those high voltage transformers. You're not even getting the first ones on shore for a year. You're not even getting the first one arriving for a year. And, you know, we might have a couple spares there. I mean, there's going to be certain areas of the country and, you know, near Raven Rock and Cheyenne. I'm sure they're going to fix certain areas. But it's not, you're not going to see it. You're not going to reap the benefits of that, you know, wherever they fix it, because they're not going to let you in. If you go a year without food infrastructure, if you go a year without heat, air conditioning, lights, sewage, you know, there's no interstate trucking, if you go a year without any food, I mean, people just don't, they don't understand, they don't grasp the magnitude of what a year without food looks like. Because by month three or month four, it's going to look like Schindler's List most times. I mean, people, I'm not saying that meanly. I'm saying most people are going to look like that a couple months in. And the idea that you're going to, let's organize and grow food. I mean, anybody planting the carrots is going to be eating them as they're growing. I don't know. On that subject, I've never spoken with this gentleman. I've followed some of his articles in the past. His name's Selko Begovic. Okay.
Right. I saw that.
He went through the Balkan Wars in the 90s. I've read articles of his over time. Somebody's finally taken a lot of his articles, put it into a book. And I think it's number three in preparedness. It's higher than mine right now, anyways. On the survival preparedness on Amazon.
Right.
And it is absolutely 100%. Anybody that is in this field, whether you're a prepper, emergency management, civil defense, it is a 100% must read. It is hands down, next to my book, the best book ever written on preparedness, okay? So, it's actually better because he has the qualifications. I say a lot of things, and he basically provides the ammunition. So he lived in a city with no electricity, no running water, no food infrastructure. His town was completely surrounded over there in the Balkans. And, you know, neighbor killing neighbor, and he talks about just you can't trust anybody, the violence, how the society quickly devolved into gangs, and, you know, it's a completely eye-opening book. The book's called The Dark Secrets of SHTF Survival, and I'm telling you right now, Selko Begovic, if you're listening to this, write it down, get the book. It only came out here a couple weeks ago. I just bought it 2 days ago. I'm about halfway through it. Just real quick, a couple of the chapters. Why many preppers will die. Why I missed the best time to bug out of the city. What hunger and thirst is really like. What we ate and how we got food. The dirty truth about water and sanitation. Dignity, the line between human and animal. When you survive, you are dead inside. common causes of death, the truth about knife attack. I mean, this guy's qualified to write this. He lived through it. You know, most of the people that I've seen people with hundreds of thousands of followers on YouTube and Instagram and Facebook, and they're really good at, you know, marketing and information marketing and things like that online. And, you know, you go and look at their bio, and it's like, you know, I grew up in West Virginia, and my grandfather taught me how to hunt. Well, that's not a bio to make recommendations on how to bug out, you know, what to do in this type of scenario. So a lot of the, quote, experts in this field, they just come at it from a very Americanized point of view, and they just don't understand what true hunger and desperation looks like. And, you know, I can't really speak to starvation, like true starvation, but I've been pretty close. My first trip as a SEER instructor was in the mountains of Washington State. It was in January, 6 feet of snow on the ground, 28 days. They gave my group of, you know, students that I was a part of, there's eight of us, they gave us a small box of vegetables and a goat for 28 days. And I mean, literally, best shape of my life. I mean, I was a machine back then. And I lost 15 pounds on that trip. And I can tell you right now, but towards, you know, the last, all you can think about every second of every day, and Seneca will talk about this in his book, is food. Your brain gets stuck on a single thing. We used to sit around the campfire at night, you know, and we would have notebooks. We would have lists of things in their notebook that each person was going to buy the second he got back on base. It was like, oh, M&M's, peanut M&M's. Oh, my gosh, everybody would be scratching out, and they'd be writing peanut M&M's. Oh, pepperoni, you know. And you would just sit there, and you would just talk about food all night long before you went to bed. That's all you talked about, was food.
Yeah, I will back you up on that, because when I went through Jungle Survival School over in Okinawa, we were doing the same thing. And we came across the old MRE cracker, and it was still in the package. And we tore that thing open and ate it like it was cake.
Yeah. We eventually ate that goat. And I can tell you, when I say we ate the goat, we ate the goat. I mean, down to the bone marrow. There wasn't... when you're hungry, people are like, I'll never eat that. I'll never eat a piece of rotten fruit. I'll never eat ants. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, wait till you haven't eaten in a couple of days, or you've been going on low. Yeah, so that's one big aspect. Another book I recommend in my book is a book called Lucifer Effect, world-renowned psychologist Philip Zimbardo. He studied how good people can do evil things. He studied the atrocities of the different world wars and Vietnam, and how, you know, a good old farm boy can go over to Vietnam and do horrific things. So it's a very eye-opening book, and you know, it comes to this mentality today in America is, oh, you know, we evolved as humans past that. You know, we're not cavemen anymore. We're not war. You know, we don't live like these third world countries. We're Americans. We're the richest country in the world. We're nice now. Everybody's, you know, there's peace and there's quiet and there's no, you know, man is essentially evil at his core. And, you know, not to get into the spiritual aspect of things, but, you know, man is evil. And especially if pushed to his limits, if you take away his food, if you, you know, kill some of his family members, die off, his kid starves, I use that as an analogy in my book. You know, you can take the average, diesel mechanic, blue collar guy, never committed a crime in his life, just church every Sunday. He's got a 4-year-old little daughter on the couch, and he hasn't been able to get her any food for like 3 weeks, and she's on her deathbed. She weighs like 20 pounds, skin and bones, her skin's gray, she's dying. That man will do anything to get food. If you're his neighbor, that man is the most dangerous man in the world right now, because he will do anything to feed his kid. And so a lot of people are like, you know what, I would never kill anybody for food. Yeah, you have no idea what you're talking about. People don't understand what humankind and what they themselves are capable of when put in that scenario. So it's a psychology thing that people don't understand. It's a lot of people writing their opinions, and, you know, some of the most popular writers in this industry and making recommendations on this stuff, they just don't have the background to be making a lot of these recommendations. So it's funny. One of the things you hear a lot is, you know, the rules of three. Preston, you know the rules of three?
Yes. I'll
put you on the spot here.
Yes.
What are the rules of three?
3 minutes without air, 3 days without water, and 3 weeks without food.
Yeah. Yeah. So In the foreword of Sunko's book, I thought this was great. So he talks about that, explains what it is. He said there's a famous survival rule of three that goes something like this. You can survive, you know, what you just said. He said, but I never read any survival rule about how long you can survive, for example, by eating grass or spoiled food in a third of your needed daily caloric amount while you are under constant physical threat, while you are under a lot of stress because your kid probably has pneumonia and there's no antibiotics. Your rifle is not working properly. Your roof is leaking on your head. There's no electricity, running water, and each day is hard work to fulfill necessities for bare minimum of existence. Necessities that you did not think about while this system was there. And here's the point. There is no rule for that. And if someone gives you a general rule about it, he is lying. Because there can't be rules determining how much a human can push on in hard situations that go on for weeks, months, or years. There's only you, your skills, your mind. So that's the opening introduction. He talks about the rules of three, which I hear everywhere. Everyone talks about the rules of three. It's like, it's a lot of the stuff that the experts do in this industry, it's really hokey. It's just kind of top level stuff. I go back to a lot of the big YouTube guys. They have these top 10 this, top five this, top three this, you know, top 10 bug out locations. Okay. Well, for where? You know, top 10 bug out bags. Well, somewhere. Like, are you bugging out from Arizona where you need to? You're going to be traveling for like 1,000 miles before you get the first spot of water. You know, are you bugging out from Florida where it's swampy, and are you bugging out in Alaska where there's tons of snow? Like, you're telling me the top five bug out bags, but for who? And that's where my consulting business comes in, because I can put some of the top level recommendations in my book, but you have to take it at face value for your current situation. And everyone's situation is different. I've got over 100 clients all over the U.S. that have some sort of survival retreats or a bug out plan of action on. And every single one of them is different. My recommendations to each one of those people are different. I have clients that can barely, you know, find coins in their couch, you know, and I've got clients that are multimillionaires, even a billionaire. Okay, that you tell them to buy something, they buy 10 of them. So, my recommendations to that guy is going to be completely different than my recommendation on this guy that could barely put food on a table today.
Right.
So, this idea that you could do these top 10s are like a lot of times the just kind of the low level just recommendations on preparedness, it's tough.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm rambling again.
One of the things that I look at is. With my military experiences, you know, you have to game plan worst case scenario. And so the worst case scenario that I feel is an EMP. And then second is a CME or solar flare. And then, you know, physical attack on the power grid, then pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just goes down from there. But, the way I see it is if you understand the worst case scenario and what you need to survive during that period of time, then you can meet the needs of any other disastrous situation.
Yes. Prepare for the worst and hope for the best. That's why I tell people to because here's another thing. A lot of these experts, they'll say, all right, how to get started into prepping. So a lot of times, you know, you have some, you know, lawyer or something that read some articles, like, wow, I should probably start putting some, how do I get started? So all the experts I've ever read, every single one of them says, well, you get started slowly. You know, maybe get a couple cases of bottled water, some MREs for your basement, get some food purification tablets, some multivitamin, and they tell us, like, just basic level stuff. I'm like, that ain't prepping. That's common sense. If you don't have a couple days worth of extra food for the, you know, a hurricane or a lights out or, that's just common sense today. The government tells you to do that. They tell you, well, we're not going to be able to show up for 3 days. So,
yeah,
you know, so that's kind of very, you talked about that concept coming from the government side of the house, you know, where we tell people, we actually recommend 14 days worth of food, water, that you have out. And the average person, you know, doesn't even have that. You know, the majority of the millennials that eat out most of their meals, they don't have food in the refrigerator. They don't even know how to cook themselves.
And then when you ask somebody if they're prepared, they go, oh, yeah, I bought this 3-day kit, you know, from Home Depot. And I was like, okay, great. You know, I live in an area, and we have 3.5 million people in our county that reside here, not including the hundreds of thousands that come every day to work in the county and visit regarding like Disneyland here and whatnot, right? So we have a lot of people here coming to the beaches in the summertime. And it's crazy to think of if we had an earthquake, right? That let alone a EMP, but just an earthquake. Yep. How are these people going to get back home? Do they have anything in their car? You know, are they willing to walk, you know, a 30 miles to get back to their home? Or can they? You know, and to boot, I go on hikes in Orange County, and people don't even bring the proper water when they're walking in the hills because they think it's good water someplace. So, in general, the majority of the population is well prepared for just daily life, let alone a week or 2 week or 30 day or 30 months of that.
I talk about that survival theory as a society, and it's because of electricity. Don't get me wrong, I love technology and electricity. I'm not Amish, okay? I'm talking to you on a Samsung Galaxy here. But because of that, it has made our life so easy for such a long period of time. The life skills needed to survive without electricity are not present in today's society. And even most of the people who think they have the life skills to live without electricity actually don't. I would actually plant my flag there and defend it, but that's a longer discussion. The skills needed we've had electricity since on a decent scale, on the 20s to the 40s. Even your grandparents today grew up with electricity, most of them. Okay? So this idea that people understand what it's like to live without electricity, they just don't. And unfortunately, you mentioned you come from the kind of the government, the civil defense, the community planning side of it. So I want to be clear here. If it is a financial collapse, if there's a hurricane, an earthquake, a volcano, if there is some kind of situation that happens to an area, okay, that is where civil defense and community planning and continuity of community and law enforcement, that's where it's vitally important. It's so important to have that because you need to have some level of communication between you guys and the federal government, the state government, to get the food where it needs to go and so on and so forth. But you lose the electric grid where there are no phones. There is no food infrastructure. A lot of people are like, oh, we'll just send some food from here to there. How? You know, there's the roads are going to be clogged, jammed full because of all the traffic lights went out at the same time. And it's just bumper to bumper traffic. And even if that wasn't the case, if it happened in the middle of the night, which it probably won't, if it happened in the middle of the night, the truckers, there's no red lights. None of the gas pumps work across the country. The truckers aren't going to be able to refuel going from wherever to wherever. And you add into it social unrest. And, you know, if there's rioting and looting going on, the trucker could be like, I ain't driving a truckload of food from here to there. Are you crazy? I'm not driving down leaving my family unprotected and, you know, just going to, it's not going to happen. I mean, you have a better chance of that trucker, you know, making a left turn and parking that truck full of food in his garage somewhere and feeding his family.
Yeah.
Like a rental Denny, right? Which had a rental Denny gets pulled out of his truck at the intersection in Los Angeles during the 90s.
In L.A.
It's head smashed, right?
You're absolutely right.
To be honest with you, if I had my choice as an emergency manager for losing power, I would rather lose power during the daytime than night because, number one, people see the intersection. At nighttime, they won't be able to see the intersection.
Yeah,
and then we lost power in 2011 for about 12 or 18 hours, something like that. And we activated our emergency operations center for the county because of dealing with issues. I mean, hospitals were down. Their backup centers doing okay, but we lost power. You're right. People were stranded because they didn't have gas. they couldn't make their way through intersections because they didn't know where the intersections were. The yeah. freeways were clogged up basically because no one knew how to get off the exit. You know?
Yeah.
They couldn't see the street signs of what the exit was. So, it was just a short period of time when we were without.
That's half of a day, right?
Yeah.
That's 12 hours. Yeah. You're talking 12 hours. We're talking a year. We're talking, take that, multiply that times, 700. And it gets exponentially worse as things progress. Because, and I talk about this, I usually tell people, most big cities, you've got 24 hours to start making your way out. I tell people not to leave on the first day. Use that first day to plan, get stuff together, leave, like 3 a.m., 4 a.m. of day two. To get out of town. But I stand by, there is a lot of, I have to keep putting this qualification on there. I'm talking about a grid that I'm always talking, my recommendations always come from a grid down scenario. So if there's a financial collapse or, this or that, or if there's a something minor that's going on, I'm not recommending, that you grab your bug out bag and start hiking down the highway.
Well, even if
the lights are still on, but
Jonathan, even if it's a bad financial collapse, you could have some of the same types of things going on. Because in Fernando Aguirre's book, Modern Survival Manual, Surviving the Economic Collapse, he wrote about his experiences in Argentina in 2001 when their economy collapsed. They were the strongest economic power in Latin America at the time, and they had politicians like we have today, and they taxed and spent, and they had a crisis, and it was horrible. He says that gangs would go out into the rural areas, rape, pillage, and burn without any worries, because nobody could hear the people out there scream. And that right there, when I read that, I the first thing I thought of was my wife, because we live in a rural environment, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a grid down, a severe financial collapse, because today is not the same America is what we had during the Great Depression. We had people who knew how to farm. They knew how to do things themselves, and they had a little bit more of a moral compass than what people today have.
Absolutely.
You don't even have to look that far back. I mean, just take a look at Venezuela today. Just watch the news. Their grocery stores are empty and people are starving right now.
They're eating zoo animals.
And the government's failing.
This has been Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schlankofer. I really appreciate you listening to our show today. Be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you until next time. Goodbye.